This is tape recording number 5702C2617ACC2, the second lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard to students on the 17th ACC on the 26th of February 1957. The title of this lecture is ARC Triangle and Associated Scales. It is 60 minutes long. Copyright 1957 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by HCO Tape Unit, St. Hill Manor, East Grinstead, Sussex, England.
And this is the second lecture of the 17th ACC, February 26, 1957. At least that's what it says on my watch. It says 17th ACC. I want to talk to you about the reality scale and the whys and wherefores of hand contact mimicry, as you will see them involve, evolve, and revolve in PCs. And this is a very simple subject and one which really doesn't require any vast amount of lecture. For a very long time, we had the ARC triangle. It might amuse you that we had affinity as its first corner, which was followed almost immediately by reality. We had affinity and reality, and afterwards had communication. And then for about 2 years, we comlagged on which was the most important corner, and a lot of people thought that reality was the most important corner. But it came about that communication had dominance when we could process communication. In other words, evidently communication was the most important corner because by processing with communication, we should do some astonishing things. Let me tell you some of the astonishing things you can do processing communication. Two-way communication. Brinkley has a problem. You make him talk about it. If you don't go to a point where you excessively reduce his addingness, he will have a tendency to desensitize on the problem. This is one of the oldest therapies known. You go and tell a friend you're in trouble, and you feel better. See, it's very old. It's by the Catholic Church. They permit you to tell God, and they reduce your havingness for having done so. And this is an old therapy, communication. However, in Scientology, this thing took on a new burnished radiator cap, and some understanding came into view here. Instead of, nobody knew before what it was it the magic word that was used, or just what it was in communication that made things communicate and made it therapeutic and so forth. They didn't know anything about this. Well, we isolated the various parts of communication. They turn out to be about 11, and they're in the communication formula, and we isolated, much more importantly, the Bill-Joe interchange of two-way communication. Now, those are very important isolations. They are tremendous. These took place at the time when I finally isolated communication as being probably the most important part of the ARC triangle in terms of what we could do with it on a free clear. See, it was most important at that time. That was about 1953-54. Now, what can you do with communication? Well, a lot of people go around, they don't have any reality on Scientology because nothing's ever happened to them. I mean, you know, the only reality they could have, somebody walked up and shot them in the guts with a 45 caliber Colt. They'd say, well, I've been shot in the guts, you know, bang. And then they'd say, well, there is something to Samuel Colt's inventions. This is the idea, their idea of what it takes to get reality on something. They can't examine something. The reality must have a mass, must have an impact, must have a very heavy effect. Witness axiom 10, which is quite true. Highest purpose of the universe, production of effect. All right. Now remember that you can reduce havingness by communication, but within that framework, let us take somebody who has no reality on anything happening to him. Of course he has no reality on anything happening to him. He's in high gain condition, which means no effect on self, total effect on others. So you're trying to plow through his consistent postulation that there must be no effect upon himself of any kind whatsoever. And if you get through that barrier, then he says, I have some reality on this subject. This is quite amusing. You mean if you destroy his no effect on self, then he'll believe you. This is totally idiotic, but that's the way it works. All right. Now, we get this fellow, he has no reality on Scientology, but he's got a toothache. We say, have him say hello to the tooth. Have the tooth say okay to that hello. Have the tooth say hello to him and have him say okay to the tooth, which makes a two-way calm. Just that. Have him do this a few times and the toothache goes poof. And we take a heavier mass than this, like an arthritic leg or something of this character. We can go further than this. We can make him get rid of his arthritis even by simply putting him in apathy about it. Arthritis is a ridge illness. And therefore, you go up or down from the ridge. And you got it made. As a matter of fact, anybody wishing to specialize in arthritis patients is a sinecure. All he has to do is push them all into apathy. Just invalidate them. Anytime they say, you know, I think I got my arthritis from sleeping in the woods when I was very young, you say, well, sleeping in the woods, scientifically, use that word liberally, scientifically, because most meaningless word in the language today. Scientifically proven that dampness and woods had no connection with arthritis. Actually, it's food, and he agrees with it, and he says, well, I have noticed that after I have eaten buckets of lime, that my arthritis turned on more strongly, and you say, well, lime wouldn't do it. And you could hammer and pound him like this until he was sitting there very, very quietly and unable to wiggle in any way, and he wouldn't feel his arthritis. Well, he wouldn't feel anything else either. Now, there's a very simple way of making somebody's arthritis turn on with violence. And you just walk up to him like this and wiggle your hands in front of his face. And, of course, by giving him this confusion outside of his body, he holds harder onto the body, and that is what arthritis is. It's a solid hold. All right, now, you take an arthritic, and you start to say hello and okay to this arthritic leg or joint or something of this character. You are actually attempting to as-is or knock out of existence by communication a lot of actual calcium. So it isn't going to work. Not well or easily. But you take slight little somatics, little conditions, or fears of things, and run two-way communication on them, and you get some fabulous results. Let's say somebody's afraid of a stove. You have them say hello to the stove, have the stove say okay to that hello, have the stove say hello to them, and they say okay to the stove, and after a while, they won't have any fear of touching the stove. Now, oddly enough, they will receive less effect from the stove, even if hot. That's quite important. That is quite important. It tells you that the body does not naturally lend itself to injury. That injury takes place only in a highly aberrated condition. You shouldn't be able to take a body and throw it up against the wall hard enough to crush its skull in and have it drop down to the floor and stand it on its feet and have it walk away. Providing you aren't holding in suspense the image picture of its hitting the wall and being injured. Now I'll give you an example of that. Give you an example of that. I want you to look at this ashtray. Always use ashtrays in my examples for the excellent reason that they are always handy. Now, I'm going to raise this ashtray and then I'm going to put it back in the desk. Is that action now in existence?
No.
Is it in existence anywhere? Where? You've got some pictures of it, haven't you? You've got some pictures of it. It is you that make things survive. This universe doesn't make things survive. Only you make things survive. You're the survival kid from way back. And it is you're holding the engram in re-stimulation, which permits it to have an effect. We'll go into this later. You're so doggone hepped on the subject of survival that it's just marvelous to behold. That is because a thing cannot do anything else but survive.
Naturally, anything that's surviving, you can go into good communication with. As we look back at the past, we find people like to look at the pyramids. Why do they like to look at the pyramids? Well, they're surviving. Well, the people are surviving, and evidently the pyramids are surviving, so there is a medium of interchange. Now, a thing looking at a solid is much happier if the solid is surviving, if it has some duration. If this solid has duration, then the Thetan can have a means of communication between himself and the solid, in spite of the fact that the Thetan can't be solid. So people really don't have much of a tendency to look at and study and examine very closely things of very finite survival periods, things that die right now, things that vanish right now, that sort of thing. They don't fix on these things to any great degree. But they could do this. They could say, look, it became nothing just like I am, and therefore I have another communication point with it. It was a solid which became unsolid or ceased to exist, and I don't exist, so therefore I have evidence that something else ceased to exist, and I don't have any mass of existence, and so therefore there is a tiny communication point. Therefore, these sudden disappearances stay hung in the bank. You get that as a disappearance. That is different than something with a finite life. Things with a very finite, small life are not very important. But solids which suddenly disappear are quite curious to a thing. You say, look, I couldn't communicate with it. It's not nothing. Hence, we like magic shows and such things. All right. Now, let's add these factors up. We'll find out that this nothingness tends to survive only when arrived at under that circumstances. There was something there, now there's nothing there. So, that I give you a motion of mist, and you make a picture survive, but it's not any longer moving in mist. Mist has very, very finite duration. So we have to rig up all sorts of things so it'll survive. So it'll continue. And people like to have things continue, but after a while, when things have not continued with them for a long time, then they get into another kick. They only hold on to it was something and suddenly became nothing. So therefore they hold on to losses. And the whole track at length becomes a concatenation of losses. You see this? Well, now communication, oddly enough, has always attended one of these losses. It is not true, basically, that communication as is or destroys or knocks out any mass. But communication has always accompanied the vanishment or destruction of mass. So the preclear gets these two things involved, and then he goes through an automaticity of having mass vanish when he communicates. You see that clearly? It's not, you must get this clearly. It is not really true that communication as is mass. This is not true. The only thing that as is mass is as is mass. But communication always accompanies this, and after a while, the preacher gets one very, very solid conviction. He thinks there is one conviction that is the last conviction that he is dedicated to, that he would never surrender, and that is the fact that if he talks to something, something disappears. It's not true. But it looks that way to a preacher, and not almost any preacher that you walk up to, you can then produce an enormous amount of vanishment by communicating. I, for instance, sound is another aspect of communication which is fabulous and which you would enjoy inspecting sometimes. You realize the first sounds were evidently those in this finite experience in this universe, were those which accompanied explosions or destructive actions. Electronic particles traveling through space will carry with them sound, even in the absence of air. Sound does not go through a vacuum. Unless you have some carrier for sound, it doesn't reach you at all. Therefore, a sudden electronic explosion was usually the first acquaintance with sound. Now, it's true that he had to put sound there, you know, in order for sound to be there and all these other things, but he has a number of experiences whereby something blew up and therefore disappeared, and sound took place. So you'll find any preacher willing to swear that sound is disintegrative. And you very often find practical engineers or good engineers or Westinghouse engineers or Einsteins or other unlearned people sitting around with this conviction that high velocity sound or high pitch sound will disintegrate mass. You'll find this in rather consistent as an effort. They're always trying to disintegrate mass with sound. Mm-hmm. Well, now sound is a peculiar mechanism of communication. See, it's just one isolated, not always present mechanism. Not all communications contain sound. By a very large statement there. It's true, they don't all contain sound at all. But sound is a disintegrating factor. So communications with sound combine the destructive aspect of sound, of which the preacher is convinced, with the assisting aspect of communication itself, of which he is again convinced. And between the two of them, you get an awful loss of handiness. If you are not very careful. Most serious blunder you could pull with a new preacher that you didn't know too much about would be to talk back and forth with him about his problems. Now, he'd probably talk about soda fountains, and he could probably talk about the latest book, and it probably wouldn't upset him at all. But you start talking about his bank, and you have a lot of mass disappearing. Mass disappears. Communication verbal tends to, as is, or knock out the masses in the bank of the preacher. You see that? We used to take inventories. We don't take them anymore. Makes preacher talk too much. And about every 10th preacher we get hold of just can't stand that much communication. The mass starts going to pieces, and we depress him to a point where we have a hard time bringing him back up the battery again. So we just start right in auditing him. We don't discuss the thing very much. Now, if he has a present time problem, which is terribly, terribly pressing, you could do something with this if you didn't talk about the problem too much. If you ran problems of comparable magnitude to it, you'd probably add to his happiness. But if you just started talking about this problem, in other words, use two-way communication to handle it, you'd shove him right on out through the bottom, and you could probably make him nuttier than many store-bought and fruitcake just by making him describe his problem over and over. He'd be in a mess. Now, the way we got away with it with running engrams was quite peculiar. The person was having to put the engram there to some degree in order to run the thing. And this made him capable of confronting the incident and so brought a discharge of the fixation he had for that incident and yet did not rob him particularly of the incident. If we took the significance out of the mass, we still had the mass. And we were running the significance out of the mass, and therefore we were able to run engrams. It's interesting. The word person couldn't afford to lose anything. He couldn't even afford to lose significance, and so we couldn't run an engram, okay? Well, communication bypasses this in many ways. It goes much further south, you might say. And we have a condition here whereby we see an individual drop through the bottom just by too much yakety-yak with the auditor on the subject of his particular phobia or bank. This tells you, by the way, at once, one of the most condemning facts, and if you wish to carry this out, if you wish to experiment with this, you will understand this is a condemning fact, are psychoanalysis. And psychoanalysis is, interestingly, 100% destructive. That's an awfully fried statement for Ronnie to make. That's pretty doggone lying. That's one of these, it is a fact statement. So they seldom go overboard on such a thing. I wrote a pad about this one time. I had a couple of pads. Made me very suspicious indeed. I started digging up all the factors utilized in psychoanalysis. And in digging these factors up, I discovered this fantastic thing that I couldn't find any factor present, which was therapeutic. All the factors present were apparently destructive. Now, you'd think if somebody just going accidentally into mental research would sort it out. And 50% of the things present would be destructive, and 50% of the things present would be constructive. But evidently, none of these were our present. Beyond the fact of telling a friend your troubles, there is no therapeutic rationale behind it because you get the as-ising of mass. Now, where Freud achieved any result, let's be generous, let's be charitable, let's say that this Viennese medico, thrown out even by the doctors and that he had in his favor, let's say he did achieve some results. Let's find out how long it took him to achieve them. Aha! They were magic results. Magic. Old woman walks from Bavaria. If you haven't got any data, for heaven's sakes, have the case come from Bavaria. It's very hard. They don't have many roads or addresses. So nobody can look them up afterwards. Anyway, an old lady came in from Bavaria and talked to him for a few minutes and just ran it on and on and all of a sudden said that she felt better. and got up and left. And Freud, I think, I'm being facetious now, but on this sudden resurgence of Case, why he abandoned Breuer's hypnotic thing, and he invented a thing called mental catharsis, which has been with us ever since, and which swept in and up to the ears as the very thing. Well, of course, if you have a little bit of something, it'll be good. Why, naturally, a lot of it would be good, wouldn't it? Freud, as far as I can discover, never had any results from cases who went longer than a very few hours in psychoanalysis. In other words, Freud's results were the magic results. A person came in and said, this is wrong, and that's wrong, and then felt better and went away. Now, on that rationale, the modern psychoanalyst builds all of his hopes of success. And he has not examined duration of communication as the chief factor in communication. If you let the patient talk too long, if you let him talk too much, he's going to go out the bottom. And that, I guarantee, you yourselves can make the experiment. Have a person who's had a recent loss. Oh, this is killing to make it a loss, you think. Have a person who has had this recent loss sit down and tell you about the loss. And then sit down and tell you about the loss, and they get a little frank about this time, they'll be trying to leave, so you'll have to make them sit down again and tell you all about the loss. And you just watch that old tone scale read along. They were able to converse with you when they first started, and you just watch them go right on down the tone scale. Bong, 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 bong. Now, they're not running out an incident, because I carried it long enough to be assured of this fact, and I've run it on other things besides this loss. It just happens that it works tremendously, swiftly, and well as an example for you on the subject of communication. In other words, they talk themselves down the tone scale. And you can actually watch them go down the tone scale. You don't have to take up a loss. You just take up a preacher who's in bad shape and have him tell you about his problem or something. And he drops on out the bottom doing this. You can watch him go right on down scale. You just make him tell you about it, and then make him tell you about it, make him tell you about it. Now remember, he's not looking at the picture. He's not returned on the track. He doesn't have anything to cite there. He's just looking at you, and you're not real anyhow. And he tells you over and over and over about this. And of course, he just chews up all happiness in the bank. And it's an experiment that you can make, and possibly an experiment you ought to make. Really understand that. Make somebody tell you his trouble over and over and over. You understand at once why Freud got spectacular results in a very few hours. And why nobody's gotten any results since on a great man. They just knocked their hat in. There are still a few other people in the United States who are still in psychoanalysis. Psychoanalysis has gone out on a tremendous press campaign lately. Philip Wiley criticized everybody to such a degree that he fell into the two-way flow mechanism, you see, and felt something was terribly wrong with himself, and the psychoanalyst got a hold of him, and I suppose I saw him the other night over TV, and my poor guy can't even talk, but I'd get hold of him someday. Anyhow, just the hour after hour after hour, of course this is going to reveal things to somebody, but it is naturally going to introvert him too. Now, it's interesting that brainwashing, as done by the Ruskies, is misdone, as that's the biggest joke of this half century of brainwashing. Well, we'll talk out enough happiness to throw himself in an introverted condition. He never gets any inflow on it. He just keeps self-criticism. You see, they make them criticize themselves, and they talk this way. If you criticize yourself, you see, you're addressing it to the bank. Now, get again this mechanism of having somebody tell you his troubles over and over. See? You're addressing it to the bank, and it's the bank you as is. You're not talking about a book up here, more or less in present time. You've got his mind concentrated upon his bank. Now you make him talk, and out goes the happiness. And he goes right on down scale with great speed. Now, please understand this as auditors. Know what you're looking at. You're just looking at the banishment of mass, and if Satan believes that to be recognized and to be able to prove things and be able to demonstrate to the world that he is there and things have happened to him, that he has to have mass. And so we get the third corner here. Affinity is actually the consideration of distance. Communication is an interchange of ideas. But reality is what it is about and what it is proved by. And that's reality. And it takes that extra corner. And looking all around now, I would say that the weakest corner of the ARC triangle, from our viewpoint at this time, is A, affinity. This is the weakest. This has the least monitoring effect upon a preclear, but is the most strongly demonstrated. It is not a good entering point. Affinity is not a good entering point. You got that. You just take it for granted in ARC that you have to act civilized to a preclear in order to get him to go through the jumps. But if you're going to work exclusively with law, I don't know, take up mysticism. It's not going to work. Been given many a whirl. Maybe love was a cure for something at some time or another. Maybe we have a cure for it. Who knows? But actually, I did have somebody, I did run somebody out of love one day. I just did as an experiment. Ran them out of love and ran them back into love again. I mean, it was very interesting. It was the space of 2 or 3 hours when they weren't in love. They were one of these desperate cases that was going to die, so and so, it doesn't happen. I gave them back a case of being able to love it or leave it alone. C and I run out A, or reestablish A. And A is very easily monitored. C is less easily monitored by A and R. And you pull R and C apart, and you've got nothing. You have no reaction. You have no universe. That's the end of that. So C and R, communication and reality, are very, very closely associated. And reality has a scale. And because C is closely associated with reality, reality then again, after 54, started to take a certain prominence. But it has not been until very recently, toward the end of 56, that this became untangled as a problem. And that is this. Reality is a scale in its own right, and that scale begins at the top with a postulate. Which postulate continuing can make a consideration? You realize that a consideration is a continuing postulate, don't you? You can acquire considerations by other means than postulating. All you have to do is agree with an existing postulate or an existing consideration, and you too can have a consideration. You didn't have to postulate in the first place. You got that. All right, now the next step down is postulate, continuing postulates consideration. Next step down from there is agreement. And here we see this vast panorama of everybody agreed with everything, which knits them all together in the same time continuum. And we have time in its manifestation. It's actually an agreement. It's an agreement on certain considerations. In other words, it's a special consideration. Postulate, a consideration. And then a couple of guys or more have the same consideration. And having it, then we have a specialized consideration. It is shared in common. And this we call an agreement. And that is all an agreement is. It's a shared consideration. So the second that we get into agreement, we get into a third dynamic, double terminal sort of an activity. See where we go there. All right. Now, having accomplished that, we get solids. We get proof of the consideration. And that takes place in spaces and solids. But reality, actually, is the solid aspect, whereas A is more closely associated to the spatial aspect. Do you see that? All right. Now, we get this old R, which we've had around here for 7 years, becoming a very respectable, well-defined thing, which is a consideration, agreed upon consideration, and a solid. All right. Of course, all that begins with a postulate. So we have this scale of reality. You must know this scale of reality. You'd be expected to know this scale of reality. You're working with it right this minute. Now, at each level so far enunciated, a certain kind of communication is necessary for communication to take place. In other words, if communication is going to occur, a certain type of communication must occur to match any particular level as we go down the reality scale. And look at this. Postulate for what kind of communication is required there? Well, you just call it, it is a communication, even though it's kind of a first dynamic. You might say it's a communication, a warning that didn't go no place. And if it comes back and sticks, it becomes a consideration. See that? Postulate to consideration. Now we have an awful lot of people around with the same consideration, and each knows that the others have these considerations. We have this mechanism known as agreement. And then because they wish to prove it and convince one another, they get something that can enter the phenomenon of sight and the other phenomena of touch, smell. Here we have spatial relationships established and confirmed by mass. Now what happens to somebody who is no longer convinced even though the mass is there? What if you took somebody and convinced him utterly with various duresses and conflicts and arguments and communist propaganda or something, that there was no wall present? Where would he go? What would happen to him? Is there any lower part to this reality scale? Well, yes, there certainly is. The one just below that is a line. The mass, called a terminal, tends to vanish, and the line between a couple of terminals tends to take place and appear. And then, below that, we get no terminal, no line. And don't mistake that for a postulate condition. And every piece of trouble you will have with a pre-clear at any time is to get that lower order taking place as a higher order. In other words, you get this person selling you a beautiful bill of goods because there's nothing there that he's in a postulating condition. He has become the total effect of his postulates, total effect of his considerations, total effect of all masses, total effect of all lines. And now he can't even see lines and masses. Such a person's liable to tell you, my thoughts affect things thousands of miles away. It's true that an OT can affect something thousands of miles away, that's for sure. But he isn't an OT, he's got lumbago. OTs don't have lumbago, that's there. When you start processing, and what happens? A line shows up. He processes longer, and shadowy things show up at either end of the line, and the line starts to disappear, and the terminals start to appear. And then you process it a little bit longer, and boy, do those terminals become solid. And after he is able to make a terminal have an effect from him, so that his confidence in this is unassailable, he can only then enter into the world of agreement. Only then are his agreements binding and valid. Only then can he make them or break them. Up to that time, he is obsessed by any agreement of the past type. He's the victim of all the upper scale at any point he is on the scale. And that is true of the tone scale, or is true of any other scale. A person, you know, does not move up level by level of the tone scale. He broadens up the tone scale. You understand that? He becomes the whole scale. He doesn't just go up click, click like climbing stairs, you know? There's a difference. So that a person who is in good shape can postulate, consider, which is to say continue a postulate, agree, make masses, or make masses disappear, or make lines between masses appear or disappear. And he can do all of those things. So you actually, any point you find him on the scale, he can do the points from there down, and you win for him the ability again. You make him willing to have the ability again to do the points from there up. Now, the reality scale is very important. It tells you that communication down below, no line, no terminal, is almost totally first dynamic communication. The person actually gets convinced that if he thinks it, it arrives in Chesapeake Bay. He gets a telepathic idea of his own thinking. Naturally, all terminals there are all there too, and all lines are there too. We have people in insane asylums who tell you that the United States government has tapped their brains, Western Union has run in a line to their brains so that they can tell what he's thinking. You know, all sorts of line manifestations. So naturally, the fellow is totally convinced of telepathy. Quite an interesting foregone conclusion. I would say, however, from our standpoint at this time, and what preachers can recover, it would be that preacher who doesn't even believe in telepathy any longer that we have to worry about. Doesn't even any longer believe in telepathy. He's getting pretty bad. Now, what's the state of a case at any one of these levels? Well, it patches up, matches up right there alongside of the old tone scale, the sub-zero scale and the original tone scale in their continuum, you see, from serenity clear on down to weight not even unconscious. This level is paralleled by this reality scale. And there's also a series of communications which go down along the whole line. And let's take our preclear at the point where he doesn't know you're there and doesn't know the room is there and doesn't know he's there and doesn't know that he has a body sitting there and he just doesn't know that he's performing on some social machinery. Now, where is the entrance point? The first thing which you can do to this preclear, we believe now, that would recall to him an ability would be the recognition of the existence of a line. Not the recognition of the existence of a terminal, but the recognition of the existence of the line. Hence, your hand against the preclear's hand. That's a line. By establishing a line, he can come into cognizance of the terminal. Your arm's liable to get awful real to him. Unless his hand and arm get real, you're not going to find anything else getting real. It's wonderful how well you can sit there and talk at somebody who is a total blank. It doesn't mean that a person responds to hand contact mimicry only when he is in terrible shape. Anybody ought to respond to hand contact mimicry. Let's take some fellow who is in pretty good shape, but he had an awful case of eczema on his hands, and you're doing hand contact mimicry. Well, he's forgotten about having had this. Happened a couple thousand years ago. He hasn't known about it since. Ever since that time, he's been very careful what he touched in the form of a human hand. He just doesn't like to touch human hands. It's just a peculiarity. It's one of these one-button sort of peculiarities. You run hand contact mimicry on this boy, and bad shape. Well, now, Caesar, he'll straighten up. He'll at least run that out. Now we go and look at our friend Julius Caesar, the fellow who foolishly, stupidly, that guy was a bad politician, refused to be king of the Romans and let in Augustus. Now, this boy, it is reported, cut the hands off, the right hands off, of 50,000 Gauls so they couldn't take up sword against the Romans. Kind of a common practice on the back track, removal of hands and so forth. Let's take it was trial by fire. Where the individual, if he was innocent, would receive no burn if he put his hand into the fire. Of course, there's everybody who's guilty. It's a sound mechanism, by the way. A fellow's more likely to receive a burn if he is restraining himself into some backtrack situation than if he's in present time. So, he takes trial by fire and losing the right hand and eczema and added up to the fact that Mama spanked his hands and all of this sort of thing, and we've got all these hand things standing in there as extra to the technique we're doing. We're doing hand contact mimicry. This is not concentrated upon freeing up his hands. We can do that much more easily, by the way. We could simply have him hold on to his right hand, keep it from going away, hold on his left hand, keep it from going away, hold on his right hand, keep it from going away, on his left hand, keep it from going away, and go this way for a while, and you free up those incidents rather easily. This isn't the one you're doing, so don't get it there. But you do hand contact mimicry with most anybody who hasn't had his hands cleared. And you're going to get some results. You're going to get some action, that's for sure. Well, now you must demonstrate between the particular momentary regain of something as he slides out of an incident and as he comes up himself in his own capability of recognizing the reality of the communication line and then a terminal. There's two different breeds of cats. That anybody is liable to get some results from it. All right. Now, as we look over then the reality scale, we find out is an immediate use in processing. Of course, a solid communication line is very fine, but what if you break it? Well, you can break it so slowly that the person doesn't notice that the hands have ceased to be lines and have become terminal. There's a little space between the two hands. There's an inch between your hand and the frequency. Just an inch. And he hasn't noticed to any great degree. Affinity starts to take place. Because we've got some distance, but the affinity you'll find will be first worst and then best with the terminals close together. The hands take the place of terminals in this particular way. Look at me, who am I, is a rather upscale process. You will notice here by now, you'll find out that's a pretty high scale. Now, the use of hand contact mimicry is then not relegated to indoctrination. It is not relegated to the preacher who is totally insane. I wouldn't use it on a preacher who is totally insane, by the way. I would work on attention as a point there, mimicry and attention. He'd do something, I'd do something. Finally get his attention, then I might go into hand contact mimicry, but it's going to take some attention, and that's going to be almost accidental at first, and that's why they're very hard to process these points. I don't know, I haven't made the test. I suppose you could sit down and just start right out with something and sweat it through one way or the other. You might very well do it. All right, but this process is not one that you would address to the insane or the very bad off or something of the sort. This would be addressed to any person that you wanted to be sure of the result. Now, obviously, you start to run 8C on somebody who develops somatics, you ought to be running 8C on them. I mean, that's all there is to that. The person did run this process. He is coming upscale, obviously. His auditory is getting more and more apparent to him, obviously. But how about the preacher who's not in too good shape and who can run AC very, very easily? Well, you're probably running his body. That's probably what's happening. And hand contact mimicry would be the point you drop back to. Hand contact mimicry is the point back to which I would drop at any time I became very suspicious that I was auditing over the head of the preacher. I go downscale to this. I'd gone way over his head, therefore I'd given him a loss, so therefore momentarily I would consider using bad communication with me, and his reality on me possibly could be graduated up to a line now. Hand contact mimicry is something you could do after a bad auditor blunder. You go to sleep while you're out in the sleep there. Some auditors do, and I don't like to myself. I like to audit. I get my sleep other places. But you do pull a blunder, and he considers this a blunder, and so forth, asking what you did wrong. And he will tell you, sometimes quite vociferously, and so on. Now, instead of risking a big row beyond just a little communication on the subject, the smart thing to do would be to go into hand contact mimicry. That reestablishes affinity, that reestablishes the reality scale, and that would bring him on up the line. It's just something to use. Now, this process, hand contact mimicry, is then something to use. This is something to use. This communication stunt of hello is an okay to a toothache are very fascinating. Hello is an okay to a bad tooth. However, what has his mass? You must always ask the question, how much headiness can the sleep clear afford to spend? So we come to this conclusion that you can jockey C communication against reality. Or as we say, headiness. Crude sort of a statement of it. And by jockeying those two things, one against the other, with good A, with the preacher, we can, of course, graduate him upscale. Quite interesting. And thus you're using the ARC triangle very quietly and very gently. R and C on the triangle. We call it headiness. We call it headiness because we understood this reality to be something else. We understood this reality to be something else. Headiness was different. Headiness was one thing and reality was another thing. Now you can recognize that in essence, reality contains a level known as headiness. And actually, in this little band of mass, there is a scale inside the reality scale. Now, when I said it goes down from postulate, consideration, agreement, mass, line, and live, I was pointing up your attention on this thing called mass. Well, what do you know? There are several different characteristics with regard to mass as it sits right there in the middle of the reality scale. We have what's known as the headiness scale. That sits in the middle of the reality scale. And that has to do with the consideration of mass. And there are a number of considerations of mass, all of which fit right square on the scale. But it's what you do with mass. So therefore, we could, I suppose, write this thing from postulate down to nothing on the reality scale and include in it smoke, these various considerations with regard to mass, but we're not going to lose the point. We actually should write them side by side, and these conditions over here relative to mass as a special characteristic of reality. We ought to write that little scale over here, and that we call a headiness scale instead of a reality scale. And that scale is quite an interesting scale in itself. It starts out probably with waste or maybe with substitute. You pay your money and you take your chance, because it is so messed up at that point of mass that it is very hard to get a pre-clear to come up uniformly with some other pre-clear as to which one is the lowest one. And it possibly goes this way. It possibly goes waste, substitute, waste, substitute, waste, substitute, waste, substitute, until you get up to the next one. You get this idea? Just as you find a great many false emotions jammed in at the level of apathy on the affinity scale. Well, you're sure you've seen this. So do you find this waste and substitute kicking around and kicking at each other on the headiness scale? So which one comes lowest? Substitute or waste? I don't know. Could be one, could be the other. But it's probably waste, substitute, waste, substitute, waste, substitute. You know, there's several of both. And now we get up to the, you could put, of course, the DEI scale in here if you wanted to. However, it goes simply on desire to havingness. So we have waste, substitute, havingness, by which we understand desire, want, acceptability, right to have, all of these things. Whereas the waste and substitute are simply only I on the DEI scale. Now we say, where's in force? Well, in force actually lies around in the vicinity of waste and substitute. You start forcing having this on somebody, you're running into a no-gain condition for yourself. Quite interesting. All right, but as far as you're concerned, you can run it this way. Better way of running it, although these scales are still themselves. Better way of running it is waste, have. As the next one up, you can waste something until he can have it. And that phenomenon is something that you can demonstrate any day. Person can't have something, you can have him waste it enough, and you'll find out after a while, he'll say, well, I can have it. All right, now if we go from waste and substitute on this little headiness scale up to headiness, well, where do we go from there? What is the next important waste stop on this headiness scale? And that is, again, as all of these things are, is something to do with mass. If you call it the mass doing this scale, you probably have it more closely described. And that next one up the line that is very, very important is confront. And that's awfully important. A person who can't confront something is liable to have to have it as his highest expression. And if he can't confront it and can't have it, it's a cinch that he will waste it. And if he can't even waste it, it's a cinch he'll substitute. That we get Freudian and other sublimations and all of that. Sublimation, they never knew what they talked about. This is not sublimation I'm talking about. This is fact I'm talking about. That's fiction. They have the idea that you put something down and the force and power of its being down sort of erupted on the surface and made you do something else. And everybody was haunted by a censor and a savage beast with a club in his hand. And actually, barbaric mental ideas is represented up to the middle of the 20th century. Are full of good belly laughs. I mean, they're almost as funny as the days when they Before Columbus sailed the ocean blue, they were sure that the ocean was inhabited by strange beasts, and that if you sail far enough, you sail off the edge of the world, and all kinds of oddities. And very few of us actually had made any vast study of those oddities, but if some of you want to go in for fauna and flora and archaeological artifacts and so forth, I look them up sometime, they'll be very funny to you. Much funnier, by the way, than I have ever represented them to be to you. I've been quite honest about this. But this thing called sublimation is substitution. I mean, why get sublimative about something that is easily done? If a person hates women, it is a cinch that he is probably hates a woman and substitutes for her all other women. But this is not a clean statement of it for this reason. You get identification, which is substitution of one woman for another, and then you get disassociation. I mean, he can't even identify anymore. Hence your lower waste level. He's wasting now a substitute. He'll find a preacher after a while will, on some subject, disassociate. He has a terrific disassociation now. He says that ashtray isn't that ashtray. You get the idea. He says this ashtray is a camel. Well, now that's disassociation. He can't recognize a thing for itself, but it must be something else. So he must understand that as an action of mass to lie on the lower end of the Haddingness scale. It's the simplest thing. Now, as we go upscale further from confront, what do we run into? We run into something, oddly enough, which is pretty doggone high, much too high for this society at this time, this particular moment here in 1957. That's contribute to. People, if they are prevented from contributing to something, go downscale. Now, contributing to something is getting rid of mass. It's somebody else is going to have something besides yourself. You take a person who is sitting down at half or below, and you make him contribute a little bit, and he gets to be a sick puppy. He'll just go on down into waste and substitute. Got the idea? But it is a very high manifestation. But it holds true all up and down this Haddingness scale that if an individual is prevented from helping, from contributing in some fashion, he gets very ill. So it's not in auditing, but in real life. You tell an individual, all right, we're not going to make you pay your taxes anymore. You would say, look, that's wonderful. You would find a compulsion would take place in society. They would be sure now that the government was about to eat them up. Because you violated the communication formula. Now, don't you see how communication is weaving into mass here? Confront, what is that meditation? Haddingness, what is that? The being a terminal which can communicate. And lower levels of that are simply confusions on the subject of terminals. But let's go on even higher than this confront. And what do we get to? We get to create. So the Haddingness scale, which fits at that innocuous word mass over here on the reality scale, consists of the doingnesses with regard to mass. And they begin at the top with create, go down at once and contribute to, go down into confront, go down into have, go down into waste, go down into substitute. And if you wrote that down as a scale, you would be quite right. But all that belongs over here on this mass. These are all things you do with mass. Now, probably there's a bunch of doingnesses with agreement. Ask an attorney. There's probably a bunch of doingnesses with postulates and doingnesses with lines. Ask the telephone company. And these things probably, too, form other scales quite similar over here to the Haddingness scale. And when you had all these doingness scales paralleling this reality scale, you would have this difference. The thing, which is the reality scale, and its aspects, which would be this doingness scale. Considerations of mind with regard to these things of actuality would be over here on this other scale. We mustn't confuse the thing with what you do with it. Many a collector has these things so beautifully differentiated that he drives his neighbors mad. He realizes, for instance, that a pistol is simply a thing, an artifact, something he collected, something that is there, and it has no doingness connected with it of any kind whatsoever. It just is. Well, that he are saying, he tells you his pistol is. And his neighbors all say, look at that fellow, he's got all those guns and he never fires a single shot. They're insisting that he do something with his business. And yet these are two separate actions. You can have without doing. It's pretty hard, however, to do without having, which is why reality is so important in running on the pre-clear. All right. Now, I hope you understand these two scales, and I hope you will take them around with you on auditing and look them over a little bit, understand what they're all about. Because we're still talking about ARC, and as a matter of fact, in this unit, we'll be talking a lot about survive, which is old hat. But my goodness, it's certainly been polished up, and it certainly has a nice new band, and it certainly fits on a lot more heads than it used to. Thank you. Thank you.